The unsurpassed, penetrating, imperfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'm going to try not to mumble. I was going to talk about the first chapter of the Shishogi. The Shishogi is a work that was all written by Dogen, but not in this particular form. In the 19th century, some of the monks got together and made basically a kind of a summary of his teachings by taking lines from various of his talks and putting them together in the Shishogi. Later today at the precepts class, I was going to show how these five chapters of the Shishogi mirror the five ceremonies of Jukhai, the taking of the precepts ceremony. But for the class today, I'm the last minute replacement, I just want to talk about the first chapter, about finding your purpose in life. The Shishogi means what is truly meant by training and enlightenment. And the introduction is this reason for training or reason for living. The most important question for all Buddhists is how to understand birth and death completely. For then, should you be able to find the Buddha within birth and death, they both vanish. Which is not immediately understandable. He's talking about the fact that all existent things are impermanent. And there's also something that as humans, we have access to that which is impermanent. There's a lovely story in the Shishogi where King Prasenajit Sharingama scripture, where King Prajnajita is asking the Buddha that other teachers have said that at the end of life you go into this blank emptiness and that's nirvana. And so the Buddha says to him, Your Majesty, how do you know you're going to die? And he says, I'm 62 years old. And he says, even from moment to moment, these thoughts just come and go. And I'm not the man I used to be when I was in my prime. And my hair is gray and my face is wrinkled and I'm not as strong as I used to be. And he goes on for quite some time about this. And the Buddha said, well, what about your visual awareness? What's the first time you saw the river Ganges? And he says, when I was 3 years old, my beloved mother took me to the festival for the goddess Jiva. That was the first time. And when I saw it, I knew that was the river Ganges. And I said, when was the next time? And he says, when I was 13. He says, the Buddha said, did it look the same? It looks the same. It looks the same today when I'm 62. He says, it hasn't changed. And so the Buddha is trying to make the point by questioning him that awareness is what doesn't change. And the awareness, whether it's our, as we get older, we're getting glasses, our visual awareness may not be quite as acute as King Pashyamata, but the point is that awareness is what allows us to see things and it is not us. It allows us to smell and hear and taste and touch and all sorts of awarenesses and consciousnesses that, and this consciousness, this awareness, is what does not change. And on one level, it's very easy for us to get in touch with this. And on another level, it's very subtle about getting in touch with that in a very permanent way. And that changes your life and changes your perception. All you have to do is realize that birth and death as such should not be avoided, and they will cease to exist. For then, if you can understand that birth and death are nirvana itself, there is not only no necessity to avoid them, but also nothing to search for that is called nirvana. We think that there must be some place that's better than this. There's got to be some place where I'm not uncomfortable. And the reality is that there isn't any place as a human being where you're not going to be occasionally uncomfortable. But your relationship to that changes. Your ability to be in touch with those things that are difficult or unpleasant and be at ease in the midst of them is when we find nirvana. All of the six worlds can be found within our own mind. Hells, heavens, animals, hungry ghosts, asuras, humans, they're all right up here. And we go through several of them, usually every day. The finding that within birth and death there is a place that is undisturbed is what we're learning in our meditation. Every time we bring our mind back to being still, we are that place. And our job is to learn how to cultivate that, what the Buddha calls developing patience with a mind in which no mental object arises, or patience with the stillness. And listening to that stillness is that doorway into the eternal. Nothing to avoid and nothing to seek for. One of Bodhidharma's teachings is another version of the Four Noble Truths, where he says, acceptance of suffering, sitting unmoved, the seeking of nothing, enlightenment proved. The truth is right there. We don't actually have to seek for it. We simply have to open our hearts to this existence itself is nirvana. But we perceive everything through this filter of self, of whether I like it or don't like it, or whether it's good or bad or whatever, and that distorts the perception. So instead of seeing things as they are, we see what we would like them to be, what we wouldn't like them to be, or what we want something else to be. We distort whatever that reality is through our likes and dislikes, whether our another way of saying that is through our own past karma distorts what it is that we actually see and experience. The understanding of the above understanding isn't just intellectual understanding. The understanding is to experience that this very moment is nirvana itself. The understanding of the above breaks the chains that bind one to birth and death. Therefore, this problem, which is the greatest in all Buddhism, must be completely understood. What he's saying here is that you have a spiritual purpose in life. And if you don't use this opportunity that you have as a human being to find that purpose and to act on it, you're wasting an enormously valuable gift. Because to be born as a human being is a rare gift. That's the next sentence. It's very difficult to be born as a human being, and equally difficult to find Buddhism. However, because of the good karma that we have accumulated, we had received the exceptional gift of a human body and are able to hear the truths of Buddhism. We therefore have the greatest possibility of a full life within the limits of birth and death. What he's trying to get across is the incredible jewel-like gift that we have to use our training to change, convert the karma that carries on the greeds and angers and fears, and turn that into compassion and love and wisdom. And nobody can do that for us. Everybody has the ability to do this for themselves. And it's only when you accept responsibility for making that effort to turn these difficult things into opportunities. There's nothing wrong with anything that happens to us as a human being. We can learn from it. The purpose of karmic consequences is not to punish us, to teach. I remember listening to a short radio thing about a woman in Texas who got an award for being the Mother of the Year. She had 5 very successful children. They were all doctors, lawyers, whatever. And she couldn't think of anything that she had done in particularly that would cause them all to be successful. But she did say, well, I never prevented them from getting the consequences of their actions. And I thought, hey, this lady needs this award. This is worth noting. Because the willingness to take responsibility for our actions and our failures to act and whatever, this is what allows us then to take that opportunity of suffering and turn that into something I can learn from. Because if you experience something that is unpleasant, go into that. Realize that there's something I need to learn from. When we experience suffering, it's because we're acting from a place of ignorance. And our ability to transform that ignorance into understanding comes through our practice of meditation. And if we turn that suffering inward and turn the stream of compassion inward, we'll find how to use that suffering in a way that is helpful. It would be criminal to waste such an opportunity by leaving this weak life of ours exposed to impermanence through lack of faith and commitment. Faith in Buddhism is confidence in the practice. The willingness to do the practice, to make the effort to see what it is that we need to do about ourselves, how we can transform things that were great difficulties into things that were great opportunities. It's difficult to be corrected as a junior monk. And there was a junior monk being corrected the other night for not having put the milks out on for the meal. And he turned and said, "Oh, I forgot the milks." He was just delighted that he got reminded. Well, if we could be delighted every time we got reminded that we forgot something or we did something impractical or imperfect or whatever, and be grateful for this opportunity, this offering, that's when we start really putting the meditation into practice. Accepting the responsibility means, yes, I did this. Whatever the truth is, you know, I hurt myself, or I forgot something, or I said something inappropriate, or whatever. Just to say, yes, I did this, and realize that we can learn from these difficulties. In my own life, things like my father committing suicide, and all sorts of other people around me committing suicide, getting married and divorced at an early age and having the difficulties of that, losing a job, all those things help me. They're the things that brought me here. You have to be desperate enough to actually want to change. So a little desperation isn't so bad. As long as you don't see yourself as this poor victim that can't possibly do anything about this horrible stuff that's happening. Being patient is what the Buddha calls the ultimate austerity, and being patient means enduring that which is difficult to endure. And being with those things that are difficult for us and turning them inward and seeing what it is that I have to learn from them, this is when we start acting on our faith. This is when we take that which is impermanent and unite that which is permanent. turn our awareness, turn our compassion, turn our understanding on that area of ignorance. It's like putting it on the altar of your heart and seeing what comes out of that. And the willingness just to honestly accept whatever's happened in the past and realize that that's happened, okay. And what we can, we're always just living in the present moment. And so we learn from the things that have happened in the past. And all of our fears and worries about are about past and future events. They're not about the present moment. And so dealing with the present moment is where we can make this transformation. And realizing our purpose, that as human beings we have an incredible opportunity to know that which is unborn. But we have to look in a different way. We can't look through that filter of like and dislike or victim and perpetrator or any of those karmically conditioned ways of looking at things. We have to look with unclouded eyes, simply to see things as they are. Impermanence offers no permanent succor, no permanent refuge. This is a great sentence. On what weeds by the roadside will the dew of our life fall? Are we going to waste our life being a drop of dew in an old weed? Or are we going to drop that drop of dew into the great ocean of compassion? That's our choice. And it happens not just once, but over and over again. We have a million choices to make in a day. And how we do make those choices determines the result that we get. If we're making those choices from listening to that still small voice, or are we making them from acting out on our old karmic habits of greed and fear? At this very minute, this body is not my own. Well, neither is our minds. We make them our own by clinging to those opinions and ideas and likes and dislikes. And that clinging is what turns something immaculate into suffering. And we have to see what it is that we can do to let go of that. Just a habit. And let go of it. And the habits of smoking and drinking and drugs and sex and all of that is nothing compared to the habit of a self. All of our likes and our dislikes. And if you can get rid of one habit, you can get rid of all of them. You just have to work on it. And work with compassion, not with judgment. You're not a bad person when you make a mistake. It's just the milks. You get them out of the refrigerator. It's not a big deal. Life, which is controlled by time, never ceases, even for an instant. Youth vanishes forever once it is gone. It's impossible to bring back the past when one suddenly comes face to face with impermanence. And it is impossible to look for assistance from kings, statesmen, relatives, servants, wife or children, let alone wealth and treasure. There's a wonderful video we saw of Dilgo Khyentse, and he was one of these very, very prominent Tibetan lamas, one of the Dalai Lama's teachers. And he was being asked by some school kids, maybe 10-year-old boy, said, well, what's the difference between money and enlightenment? And he didn't even have to think about it. He just said, well, money disappears eventually and enlightenment grows forever. It's just that easy. The kingdom of death must be entered by oneself alone, with nothing for company but our own good and bad karma. I've been reading a lot of books about near-death experiences where people have been dead for a little while and come back. And there was this one that really struck me as amazing. It's this man who had been really violent. He estimated he'd been in 6,000 fights by the time he got out of high school. And I don't know how he counted them up, but he must have had nothing else to do. And then he went into, it was during the Vietnam era, he went into the Marine Corps Special Forces training and became an assassin. And his job was to go out with two other Marines, and they would find the person they were targeting from, you know, several hundred yards away, and the other two Marines would say, yeah, that's the person, and he would shoot him. And his last act for the government was to deliver guns to a Central American country to foment a revolution of some kind. And then he got struck by lightning, and he had this very intense experience where he got a review of his life, and he had to experience all the consequences of his actions, and actually to feel what everybody felt as a result of his actions. And not just the person he hit or the person he killed, but the family members and the economic circumstances and all the other ramifications of these actions. And he got to experiencing everything that those guns did. And in the midst of this, he looked up at this being who was reviewing his life with him, and he was expecting some sort of reproval or reprimand or judgmental actions. And what he got was just unlimited loving kindness. But he was willing, amazing thing, he was willing to take it all. He didn't turn away, which was really amazing. And it's that not turning away and just taking the consequences, whatever they are, and accepting them and learning from them. Needless to say, when he came back to life, he didn't do those things again. He had a different perspective. And that's what our practice is about, is changing our perspective. Because we see the world through this filter, and it's a world of illusion. We don't see things as they are. We see things as we would like to see them, or not like to see them if we're in that kind of mood. The kingdom of death must be entered by oneself alone, with nothing for company but our own good and bad karma. We can't rely on any external things. Master Mayan gave a lovely talk last week on, was it last week or the week before? Week before. On the mind that looks outside, it's the mind that creates suffering. The mind that looks at the mind is the mind that puts an end to suffering. And that's looking at our own mind, is looking from that place of awareness. Another line from the Sharangama is that which understands the error is not itself in error. And when we realize that we have this awareness, this part of us that actually sees what's going on, and we have to put ourselves in that position of watching what it is that we do, seeing where we make mistakes, seeing how to correct them, we do not have to follow these habits alone. We can change them. One of the things it says to do is avoid the company of those who are deluded and ignorant with regard to the truth of karmic consequences, the three states of existence and good and evil. The three states of existence are past, present, and future, and to realize that birth isn't the start and death is not the end of this process. And we have to realize that what we do in this lifetime, those habits are the ones that get carried on. And what we've inherited, we have a lot of inheritance of old karma that causes us to react in certain ways. Two little kids will see a dog, and one of them will be absolutely delighted, the other will be running away. And these are karmically programmed reactions. And we have to see that we can change those. And our meditation is the real gift that we have, the major tool in this process of transformation. Understanding that there are lots of levels to understanding good and evil. But if we try to understand it through a judgmental approach, to seeing, oh, that's bad and that's good, that doesn't help. In the Lakavatara Sutra, the Buddha is playing around with the idea of killing. There are five things that take you to the Avicii hell, the lowest hell, and that's killing your, one of them is killing your parents. Well, he was saying that actually you could see your old karma as your parent. And said, you can kill that. That's allowed. But you have to understand what killing means and what it means, what good and evil actually are. It's obvious that the law of cause and effect is not answerable to my personal will, for without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. If this were not so, Buddhism would never have appeared and Bodhidharma would never have come from the West. One of the laws of the universe is that evil is vanquished and good prevails. It simply happens not because there's any lawgiver. It's that we actually live in a compassionate universe. We don't always see that if we read the news every day. But they don't put good things very much in the news. That doesn't sell newspapers or make it to the online news. There are basically five laws of the universe. Ones are the laws of genetics, laws of mathematics, that sort of thing. And there's the law of karma. There's this evil is vanquished and good prevails. And the fifth one is that everybody has an intuitive sense of the eternal. You have everything you need to convert whatever karma that you have collected up. But you have to see how to do that, because that old karma is the residue of ignorance. And if we continue to act out of greed, anger, and fear, well, we just get more greed, anger, and fear, fearful results. If we look at those things and see what is truly wise to do and what is truly compassionate to do, then we can change what it is we actually are doing, and we can change the way we're doing it. There are three periods into which the karmic consequences of good and evil fall. One is the consequence experienced in this present world. The second is consequence experienced in the next world. And the third is consequence experienced in the world after the next one. Reverend Master Hubert was explaining to me that in Japan, that there's kind of one, two, and then three means everything else. So in this particular context, it means you get the karmic consequences in this lifetime, you'll get them in the next lifetime, and it may be some other lifetime things will just pop up. Could happen any time in the future. One must understand this very quickly before undertaking any training in the way of the Buddhas and ancestors. Otherwise, mistakes will be made by many, and they will fall into heresy. In addition to this, their lives will become evil, and their suffering will be prolonged. The Master used President Nixon as a good example of somebody who is teaching us what not to do. But he's still a Buddha teaching us what not to do. And he really thought that he would be the best person to be the job president. And so he didn't care what methods he used to try to get this. And he had a good intention, but because he wasn't keeping the precepts, there are karmic consequences. And when you're in that position and you make these kinds of mistakes, the consequences are going to be viewed by the entire world. And it's, I'm sure, enormously embarrassing. What's important is that he didn't do anything that we haven't been tempted to do ourselves. Anybody who can get angry can be a murderer. Anybody who gets hungry enough can be somebody who steals a loaf of bread. You know, it's when you're driven to feeling desperate about something, you do desperate things. And what you have to realize is that those things simply don't work. It's not because they're bad or you're bad, it's because the precepts are there to show us what works, how to behave like a Buddha. If you want to know what Dogen is talking about here, then we have to change our behavior to act more like a Buddha. Nobody said this was easy. None of us have more than one body during this lifetime. Therefore, it is indeed tragic to lead a life of evil as a result of heresy. Heresy here just means ignorance. For it's impossible to escape from karmic consequences if we do evil on the assumption that by not recognizing an act as evil, no bad karma can accrue to us. So a lot of the karmic consequences that we may experience may happen because of something in the past, and you may, even before our lifetime, and have no memory of why this is happening. But it doesn't matter the why so much, it's just how we respond to the suffering of our own existence. And whether we take that as an opportunity or whether we look at that as some sort of defeat. And it's really important to recognize that this opportunity of ours is to find the eternal, is to know the truth, to become one with that awareness, to become one with that which is undisturbed in the midst of suffering. This is where we find freedom, freedom from suffering. Because the things that we experience as suffering are the doorways in. They're not something to be avoided. And that doesn't mean you don't go to the doctor when you need to go to the doctor. It means and you need to take the medicine of the Dharma if you want to put the end to the suffering. And the medicine is being given here all the time. But it's up to each of us to make that choice to actually take it. That's it for today.